y'all. Left all in my good old present for my baby and for me. Merry Christmas, baby.
Merry Christmas, baby. It is 10 minutes after 12, the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. It is a Wednesday afternoon. Thanks very much to John Hansen. I think Suzanne Muchin as well, who filled in for me earlier this week. So I'm here on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And, well, speaking of Santa Claus, I don't know that she's Santa Claus, but Terry Savage is on a phone line. And the cool thing about Terry is sometimes you can do things that really change people's lives. And we have talked about this, Terry. Welcome back to the Biz Lunch, I should say. But we've talked about this program a couple of times because we've gotten great feedback. And now this small business insurance plan that you told listeners about a few weeks ago is going to be even more available. Nice work, Terry Savage.
It's available for those who applied already by December 15th. I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to give you the details, which were sent to me last night. We really did a big thing, Steve. You know, all those individuals who couldn't find good insurance on the Obamacare exchange, if they were part of a small business, they had a rare opportunity. There was Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois was so swamped by applications from small businesses. And I must say largely as a result of what we triggered on our show, that they, for those who had already applied but hadn't completed their applications, they let the brokerage industry extend the deadline. But you had to have already applied by December 15th. But good for our listeners. Good for all of you who pay attention and told your friends about that great deal. And we'll try and keep giving you more good ideas like
so
that.
So this is sort of like when people were signing up for Obamacare the first year or two, and it was so busy late in the sign-up period, they just extended it for people who had already begun the process.
Exactly.
Well, that's great. And I'm really glad that you shared that with everyone here on the program, because it's really nice to see people take advantage of that and that we can help. I want to talk about looking ahead to next year and all of that, but let's wrap things up this year now. Everyone's watching the Dow. The Dow may or may not hit 20,000. It's retreating
right
a little bit today, right? So
exactly.
What does all of that or any of that mean?
You know, market analysts are having a field day. They're all over the media talking about all the things that could possibly go wrong with the stock market or why it should move on to 20,000 and beyond. And that's something for the professionals to debate. They want to be in the line of fire. Right now, there are plenty of arguments about why the stock market is, quote, overvalued. The price-earnings ratio is too high. The dollar is too strong. That means we won't be able to sell our stuff overseas, so that'll cut corporate earnings. Costs are going to start to go up as interest rates go up. I'm not going to list all the arguments on either side. The point is that the stock market's in pretty frothy territory, but as a wise economist once said, the markets can stay irrational longer than you can stay solvent. So you just have to ride the trend. Let me say that what I know for sure is more dangerous than the stock market right now.
What's that?
Is the bond market. And people think, well, I'm not invested in the bond market. I mean, what is it? That's for pension funds and stuff. Look, the fact is that if you own a balanced fund or an equity income fund, or if you have an investment account where you own bonds, when interest rates go up, bond prices fall. They fall farther for the bonds with the longest maturities. In other words, if you tied up your money for, let's say, 20 years at 3.5%, which looked like a pretty good deal a year ago, and interest rates start rising, your bond will still pay its 3.5% yield. But if you need to sell it, you won't get $1,000 back. The higher rates move, the bigger the bond price will drop. So for sure, when rates rise, all bond prices fall. The bigger declines come in bond prices that have longer maturities. And this is not a function of will they pay? Is there a risk about them paying? This is strictly a function of when you have cash, you can now get higher rates. And therefore, nobody wants your old, lower-yielding bond. So you may think, well, I'm not exposed to the stock market. I'm safe because I'm in something conservative like bonds. But bond prices, if you look at your portfolio, can fall. About 3 weeks ago, the 10-year U.S. Treasury was yielding, about 1.75%. Now it's over 2.5%. And that's a pretty big move. Yeah, it's not going to make much difference in the interest you get on your money market account. It may make some interest, a difference in the interest you pay on a mortgage, because those 10-year treasuries set the rate for mortgages. And it'll give banks an excuse to raise your credit card interest rate. But when it comes to your investment portfolio, beware of bonds, because when rates are moving up, bond prices will fall.
And that's just a negative that we need to accept, right, with the positive, the fact of growing economy. And it was inevitable that the interest rates were going to go up. So sort of inevitable that bonds would suffer.
Yeah, exactly. And but you need to be aware when you are hiding from stocks that bonds are not the place to hide. That's all I'm trying to say. I think, first of all, if you have a long run perspective, and remember, even if you're 65 and you're just going into retirement, the odds say you'll live another 20 years. So you definitely need some stocks, and the stocks are always going to have ups and downs. And believe me, there's arguments on both sides of this. So I never stake out a position. But the point is, as you get older and are in retirement, you want to take less risk with stocks. Don't go hide in bonds. So your question to me is, okay, where do you hide?
Where do you hide?
Fortunately, the only place to really hide, if you're in that spot where you know you can't risk losses, is in money market funds and CDs, which are still not paying you very much interest, if anything at all.
And they will be paying more with higher interest rates, but not much
sure
more.
It'll creep up, but the banks are not going to be very generous in paying higher interest rates on your CDs or your money market deposit accounts. So what you're doing is you're hiding from risk in a place that doesn't really reward you for hiding there. The only thing that kind of chicken money gives you is peace of mind to sleep at night.
All right, we got
to
get
a very tough time to make decisions now, because stock market looks rich. Bond market, we know, will fall as interest rates go up, and you're not getting paid in a money market fund.
We have to check traffic, but this is the last show I'll do. I don't know if you're on next Wednesday. I'm not. Show of the year. What I don't want a big prediction, but, you know, are stocks going to continue to hold, or are we going to end next year lower than we started?
I'm much more comfortable asking that question than answering it.
Me too.
Because the truth of the matter is, I have no idea. And anybody,
Look at how we started last year with the deep drop in the Dow.
Exactly. We had an almost 20% decline last year in the first six weeks of the year. I mean, I can look at history, but right now, I do what the market tells me to do. And the market always tells me to have a certain percentage in stocks and not to get nervous about that. Do I get nervous? Yes. But discipline is what overrides emotion.
All right.
But the point is, before you get emotional, decide what percentage you can afford to risk.
We can't necessarily control the stock market, but maybe we can control our spending. I want to take a break and run over some 2017 budget ideas with you. Sound good?
Great.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Twelve twenty-two. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Terry Savage is on the phone line today talking about, well, maybe some year-end things. And maybe let's look to next year. Terry's column at the Huffington Post and at terrysavage.com this week has to do with planning a budget for next year. Terry, come on. People are wrapping up their holiday shopping. No one wants to worry about their budget.
I know, but this is a perfect time. Think about it. This week, well, of course, you have the holidays. But then next week, before New Year's, you're sitting around. You're not much happening at work. And what a perfect time to start your budget. So let me say two things. First of all, I'm about to send out one of my infrequent newsletters whenever I'm in the mood. So if you sign up at terrysavage.com for my free newsletter, you'll get the link to my personal financial organizer. My newsletter will also contain that link, because one of the things you might do when your family's around next week is to sit down and look at what you have left undone. Things like, do I have a will? Does my family know where all my accounts are, and so forth? That's what the organizer is good for.
My mom calls it her death drawer.
Exactly. I know that. My mom had one too. And now I guess it's my turn to start one. But all I can tell you is that I've got three ways to think about your budget. And these are things that you don't have to download this before Christmas, but make a great Christmas gift. But you could do this in the week in between. So the first one is this fabulous book I've been recommending for years. When I asked the publisher to send me a new copy of it quickly, they sent it to me, and my blurb is on the front cover. It's called The Budget Kit. It's at Amazon.com. It's by Judy Lawrence, The Budget Kit. or you can go to www.moneytracker.com. It's really a fabulous book. It's not just worksheets. It's
right.
explaining it, takes you through it.
But it is, if you need something, but if you want something in your hands that you can turn the pages and all, that's a great option.
The budget kit at Amazon.com. My other one, of course, is, well, this is a perfect time. Over the holidays, you have time. Download the latest version of Quicken. I think they're having it on sale now for $39.99 at Quicken.com. You can do this, even if you're not a techie. You can pay your bills online at your bank, click a button, and it downloads right into your Quicken. You don't have to make the budget. You can just divide everything in categories and see where your money went. You could download all of this past year and get yourself ready for next year. You can also do that with your investments. You don't have to go that far. But Quicken is wonderful, whether you're paying your bills through Quicken or just at your bank and downloading the information. Quicken sits on your desktop or on your laptop. So there's a third holiday gift idea. Your kids will love it. They'll think you're so cool. Go to mint.com, M-I-N-T, mint.com. This is a free app.
I was going to say, this is it's a great gift because it costs you nothing.
It costs you nothing. And it puts your entire budget and coordinates all your spending from your checking and credit card accounts into various categories. And it lets you budget, and even better, it's on your smartphone. So you take this with you wherever you go. And if you're out at the bar, dinner, you know, and you sit at the bar saying, okay, you guys go to the table, I'll take care of the bar bill. You could get a message, a text message going, swoosh, you are over your entertainment category nice. Spending. Do not buy dinner.
I don't know about that.
It's a two-way street. Mint goes, sends you text messages.
I was reading this column today and thinking of it, you know, and my wife Sharon does all the Quicken stuff at our house now. Thank you, Sharon. But I remember in the early days, I had software, and I don't remember what the software was called, but his name just came back to me. It was Andrew Tobias.
Oh, that was Managing Your Money.
Managing Your Money, MYM, that's right.
A long, long time ago. But now it's devolved down. There used to be a bunch of them. Right now, by default, it's not like I'm a shill for Quicken. Quicken is it. And by the way, the neatest new thing in Quicken, and I'm going to write a column about this. Last year, and I kind of miss this, they came out with QuickBooks Self-Employed.
Oh.
You know, self-employed people have a real rough time. You don't get a regular paycheck. Your clients pay when the project is done. You don't know if you're going to have a client. QuickBooks Self-Employed is not just for handling your money, but it's for organizing your budget if you are self-employed and you have irregular income and you want to be ahead of things, not going, oh, my gosh, I can't pay that till those clients pay me. And TurboTax is going to have this year TurboTax for self-employed. So if you're self-employed or in addition to your work income, you have self-employment income, you might want to download QuickBooks Self-Employed, and then the TurboTax Companion is coming for taxes. Even if you didn't use it all this year, this will be a big help because everybody knows that people who get laid off are either A, retired, or B, consultants, or C, self-employed.
Terry.
And that's a big growing number of people in America.
Terry Savage, great to talk to you. Have a great Hanukkah. Happy New Year. And I'll talk to you in a week or two.
I'm sorry, you won't be there Wednesday, but I will be sitting in there giving some New Year's resolutions ideas. But don't forget, go to terrysavage.com. I waited to send out this newsletter so the last of you could sign up and get the link to the financial organizer that comes with it.
terrysavage.com. Okay, later, Terry. See you later.
Okay.
It's the Biz Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much, Ryan Burrow. Steve Bertrand here, 12:36 on the Business Lunch. Barry Sterner is going to come along from Townstone Financial. Some encouraging housing numbers were released today. And actually, talked to Dennis Rodkin from Cranes a few weeks ago about how November was big for home sales in Chicago. And maybe there's a late year rush, a little unusual, but it seems to be happening this year because of interest rates. So we'll talk to Barry coming up about that. Speaking of Cranes, Frank Sennett is on the phone line, and he joins us from time to time to talk about some of the things in Cranes. And Frank, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Thank you, Steve.
You all ready for Christmas?
I got some stocking stuffers the other day, but a lot of the big gifts are still, you know, computer click away, I think.
The computer.
How about you?
Well, you know, you have to rely on delivery then. I was at Barnes & Noble last night doing the books. Love to give books for Christmas, so I think I'm just about wrapped up.
Well, good for you. Yeah, I might make a run out to the stores I can get lost in like a cost-plus world market for 3 or 4 hours.
So. That's okay because they send out flares. They'll go look for you if you need to in the big pillows. all right, so I want to talk first about this story. It looks like it was maybe a BGA story that you guys worked on when it comes to lawsuits filed against the two Chicago public hospitals, right? You got Cook County and the University of Illinois hospitals.
Yeah, so there's a report out by the Better Government Association. Frames is the publishing partner for that. Thought it was a really eye-opening report and deserves a little widespread notice. Basically, they analyzed through open records requests all the payouts for medical negligence of the two major hospitals, public hospital systems, Cook County Health and Hospital System, and the University of Illinois Hospital and Health Sciences System. And they saw that from 2012 until last September, the settlements total more than $80.5 million in the Cook County case and $83.7 million in the University of Illinois Hospital System roundup. So
we're talking like $20 million, almost $20 million a year.
Yeah, $160 million total, almost $20 million a year. And the report says it does vary widely from year to year. You know, as you can imagine, some cases are bigger than others. But what they found is that there's a fairly persistent trend of having trouble cutting down on these mistakes. We're paying for it as a result.
You know, it's funny, Frank, because when you do it from the dollar numbers, that's a lot of money, $20 million a year for a health system to absorb. But, you know, I'm always thinking everybody's always suing and all of that. I was kind of surprised by the number of lawsuits and the number of settlements. It was much lower than I would expect. So for Cook County, they settled in 41 cases or had an adjudication, I think, in 41 cases. And for the University of Illinois system, it was 33. So that's roughly or almost less than 10 a year when you put those two together. I was kind of surprised by that.
Yeah, and I would imagine that's a good perspective to put on it. Those clearly were the bigger dollar cases, and maybe it is the case in more minor situations. Maybe there are earlier settlements or, gets tossed quickly or people just decide not to file suit, to your point, and maybe it's not quite as litigious as we thought.
I also like there's a citation later in the story talking about lawyers and how they turn away most prospective clients unless they think the case is a guaranteed win because it's so hard to take on the hospital. So, again, there's another situation which I think might be contrary to our public perception that all of these suits are being filed all of the time. And at least according to this story, there's sort of a filter there that a lot of lawyers don't take the frivolous suits unless they know they're going to win because they're going to be so expensive.
Well, yeah, if you think about it, if you're an injury attorney working on a contingency basis, contingency means you only get paid if you win. And so, yeah, that's a good filter indeed. You got to feel like you're at least going to get a settlement that will pay for your time and effort. And so I think you're very right there. That's a good point.
But we still are talking $20 million a year. And I know these guys are they're putting millions of dollars into trying to cut down on mistakes, right? Or in lawyers themselves, are they improving when it comes to reducing errors that lead to these payouts?
Well, I think that you've got University of Chicago and Rush recently receiving A grades from Leapfrog, the rating service, and U of I and Stroger got kind of middling marks for overall patient safety. Stroger received a C and U of I a D in the most recent hospital safety grade report. So definitely some room for improvement there still.
All right. So we'll follow that. An interesting story. And I just am interested in what you all think of the numbers because, yeah, it's big money. I really thought I thought the number of cases might be higher.
And I think your point about the contingency attorneys filtering them out, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and that's encouraging, too. Okay, let's go drive a Tesla. hey, I'm closer than you, right? They're opening up a Tesla showroom right here on Michigan Avenue.
Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun up at the 900 North Michigan shops. You can, have lunch at Spiaggia up there, have a drink at the Drake, and then go across the street and drive a Tesla.
Maybe
a non-alcoholic drink.
They're not going to let you take them out and drive them from there, are they?
I don't know. I mean, it probably depends on how much they vet you, and you know, if they think it's just me walking off the street, right. I guess no. But yeah, I think these are more for taking a walk around, sitting inside, getting that new car smell to amp up your urge to open your wallet.
I guess. You get the new car smell, but not the new car sound with a Tesla. That's the drag.
Yeah, they should build in some you know, computer-aided revving sounds, I think.
So this is how they sell them, though, right? There's one at Oak Brook Center, I think, or maybe in Old Orchard. They don't do the traditional up and down Western Avenue. They tend to go to malls and big showy places like that?
Yeah, so they're going to be, it's just a 5,000 square foot showroom, so very small compared to, you know, what you're used to seeing from a car dealership. And they want to go where there's, you know, people with money walking around clearly. And they are just now going from the big regional mall footprint to more urban locations. So this is kind of a change for them. But still, you know, again, where people are spending some money.
Right. And so you can go to the showroom and see the different shades of silver that your Tesla can come in.
That's right. I always like driving behind them on the Kennedy and seeing that there's like the E license plate, right? I mean, it's
yeah.
Electric. Yeah.
Hey, we got a minute left. I want to talk about the VHT Studios. They've been on the show a couple of times. Brian has been here talking about this, and Cranes wrote this week about it. Was Dennis again? How?
Yeah, I was going to say you mentioned Dennis. It's he's our man.
Yeah, but it's an amazing thing the way they are taking photos of buildings or homes or condos that are for sale. They can take out old furniture, put in new, change the carpeting or change the color of the walls, and VHT is really sort of revolutionizing the way people view homes.
Yeah, now, you know, if only they could do this for people who are, you know, viewing online dating, right?
But exactly.
They basically give you a virtual makeover. If instead of having to pay to paint a house, you can pay VHT up to $600 for an entire property, and they will take the photos and change the colors on the walls and, you know, give all sorts of visual upgrades so that you can show, you know, what is the best possible scenario for this property? So
which is cheaper than paying for the professional stagers to come in and do it physically. But I'm interested, the downside is if you make it look too nice and then someone goes and actually stands in the condo, they could actually be a little depressed by the way things look.
That's kind of like what happens when you Photoshop your face too much and you go on a you know, Tinder date.
Right. I'll let you know when that happens. Frank Sennett from Crane Chicago Business. Hey, have a great Christmas. We'll talk again soon, okay?
You too. Swipe right on Steve.
Swipe right on Steve. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much, Steve Alexander. Steve Bertrand here as we continue the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Barry Cerner is in the studio, the CEO of Townstone Financial. Barry, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. And happy holidays.
No one's buying a house over Christmas, right? So you got nothing to do for a few weeks. Got your feet up.
I wish it was like that, but everybody is looking right now. I shouldn't say everybody. A lot of people are looking right now at the spring. They're planning spring, summer. If you have kids, you might be thinking about moving. And I think there's more demand right now and people looking than I've seen probably in 6 or 7 years. The economy's really good. There's a lot of confidence in people's job outlooks. And even though rates have gone up, I mean, I don't want to tell anybody anything different, we're still at pretty much historical lows if you look, you know, over the past 50, 60 years. When you're a little bit over 4%, that's not a big deal.
National Association of Realtors today says the Americans bought homes in November in the fastest pace in nearly a decade. And despite the fact that there aren't, right, we'll talk about this, but there aren't a lot of homes for sale. The market's kind of shrunk
that way. Still
lacking
supply.
Seasonally adjusted rate of $5.6 million. The highest, that would be the highest annual rate since 2007. Sales were up 15%. From a year earlier. So those are the November numbers, which likely reflected the fact that a lot of people expected the interest rate to go up so that they were trying to buy ahead of that. I mean, is that really an impact? I mean, if you're going to buy a house, that's a big deal. Are you going to buy something in November rather than December just to take advantage of a quarter percentage in the interest rate?
You know, when, like you said, that's a long-term decision, and it's very, very difficult to make it on, you know, on an interest rate movement in 30 days. You know, you're sitting at your dinner table or you're sitting there Saturday and Sunday saying, honey, there's not enough room in the house. And, you know, if interest rates go up a quarter point or a half a point, I doubt you're going to say, oh, we got to stay here. We're not leaving.
Right, right. And so tell me why then there has not, why homes for sale have been sort of at a premium. There aren't that many for sale.
You know, I've come in here and I was listening to some of the things that we talked about last year and the year before, that there weren't a lot of homes for sale. I'm in the South Loop now, and I know where you're out in the suburbs. On the weekends, I've seen a number of homes for sale over the last 3 or 4 months, a lot more than there had been in the spring.
Right.
I think we've gotten to a level pricing-wise. You know, a lot of people were underwater, and as they move closer and closer to even or a little bit over,
they can afford to sell.
They can afford to sell now. They feel better about it. And I've seen a lot more houses for sale on Sundays now, on open houses, which I do go to quite often. It's not nowhere at the level that we need it to be right now for the demand, but it's better for the house seller right now because you basically have an item that people want very badly, and there's not a lot of competition.
So if you're sitting there and, you know, your mother-in-law is coming over for Christmas and the house isn't big enough and you're looking, interest rates have been going up pretty significantly in the past 3 weeks,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Are they going to continue to do that?
You know, I think we're going to find a range, and I think we're pretty close to that range right now. We've been in the low fours for a 30-year fixed, and we're in the mid-threes for a 15-year fix right now. And the real question, as we were just discussing, is what's going to happen January 20th. We'll see what the Trump presidential election does and what he can actually do with Congress. Is he going to be able to spend billions of dollars and pump up the economy by spending, which, of course, is going to raise interest rates because they're going to have to fund that some way.
Right. It's and this is going to sound critical, and I really don't mean it to be critical of Donald Trump. I truly don't, because it is going to be fascinating to see what he does, because he seems to be telling people in many cases what they want to hear. You know, it's going to be a big infrastructure spending. I keep going back to the Al Gore meeting. Al Gore came out of Trump Tower, and it sounded like he thought he had a convert when it comes to the environment. And then the next day, he appoints a very strict EPA director. So I think Donald Trump is pretty good, and he's done that before, where he'd rip on people and then is very friendly to them
later.
It's a
good businessman, right? When you have a meeting, you leave the meeting, and the other side thinks that you had a good meeting.
Yeah, exactly. So there are a lot of those thoughts around, but we don't really know what he's going to do, if he's going to get that infrastructure. And so really, it's going to be fascinating to see that way.
Right. Right now, I wanted to say, you know, we're 3.75 since the Fed raise on the prime interest rate, which affects people that have home equity lines of credits and things of that nature that are variable. But even ARMs right now, 5, 7, 10-year ARMs, people are starting to look at that. You're buying your first house. You may only be there 5 to 7 years. Why get a 30-year fixed rate, so you can still get a very, very attractable rate, affordable rate, I would say. I mean, and when I bought my first house, I hate to always say it, it was at 10% in 1989, and I bought the house, and
right.
I lived in the house, and I paid for it.
And we're still historically very low.
Absolutely.
And it's probably going to go up, but it's still in the big picture. You shouldn't change your mind for a half a percentage point.
No, I mean, a half a percentage point, depending on what your loan size is, you know, could be anywhere from, you know, $25 to $100 extra a month. If you're buying a house and you can't afford that, you know, you really have a problem because your taxes might go up $25 to $100 anyway in property taxes. So you need to always, you know, keep some reserves and know where you're at.
That's Barry Sterner, the man behind Townstone Financial. So go out and buy a house for your wife for Christmas.
Absolutely. And you can give me a call at 312-896-2110 or go to townstone.com. We'll be happy to help you out and pre-qual you.
Nice to see you.
Thank you.
Have a great day. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.